Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:28 in that specific summer time. And today is Friday, June 24th. And of course, it being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And we have a lot to talk about. So I'm going to apologize in advance if this is going to be a long audio. But obviously, the key thing that is roiling markets at present is the fact that the UK has decided to leave the EU, and that is the first country to exercise Clause 50 of the Nice Treaty and to exercise their right to you have a plebiscite and vote to leave. That was never really envisaged as a possibility, but as bad as it might be for the short-term economic outlook for the UK, it represents a much greater challenge for the Eurozone, because while the UK is part of the EU, it is not a Eurozone member. And what this does is it increases the potential that one of the Eurozone members is going to have a vote to leave. And the cross-ownership, the cross-lending between Eurozone members and corporations within the Eurozone, governments within the Eurozone, and is really just something that is incredible to behold. So, and it's very simple to, and just very easily to characterize it, because a couple of years ago, I was very curious to try and identify any bank in the Eurozone that did more than half its business outside the Eurozone, and I only found three. And off the top of my head, the only two I can remember are Banco Santander and BBVA, because of their substantial Latin American presences. Now, of course, the UK has got HSBC and Standard Chartered, and then of course Georgia Bank is also listed in the UK. But the reality is that what the creation of the euro has resulted in for Europe has been a large expansion of individual countries and individual corporations to expand within the Eurozone and to take advantage of the single market and the single currency. And that might now well to prove to be an Achilles heel. What is particularly interesting is not so much that we had volatility today, because just about everything had big moves in here today. And of course, we really should start out by looking at the UK. So the FTSE was down 3%, and on the face of it, that's not very much. But of course, the pound was down 12 cents. It's finishing out the day at 136, but it was as low as 132. And that's as low as it's been since 1985, which gives you an idea of just how severe this crisis is in the short term. And then now here are the big questions. It is going to be a very large question as to just what kind of deal or trade agreement the UK is going to negotiate with the Eurozone. The UK has obviously got a vested interest in getting the best possible deal, but the Eurozone has got a vested interest both in keeping the UK sweet, because they are neighbouring countries or blocks, and also not too sweet, in order to forestall any additional moves to have referendums and to leave the Eurozone. So it's going to be a very delicate balance, and it is going to play out over the next few years. So there is ample opportunity for additional uncertainty. Now, this is a problem for the UK leaving the EU is a problem for the EU. It's a challenge for the UK, but it's a problem for the EU. Having taken back the decision-making potential for Westminster and for the people generally, then the UK has a number of choices available to it, and to cut regulation, to foster an entrepreneurial environment, and to simplify the tax structure, to potentially cut corporate taxes in order to really encourage companies either to site within the UK or not to leave. These are all options that are available to it, and all of them could potentially boost growth, and particularly so when the UK has got a weak currency. So to say that the UK has no options is really to miss the point entirely. The UK now has more options available to it than it has had at any time since it joined the EU. So then the worst possible thing that could happen for the EU is for the UK to make a go of it and to come out of this on top. So then they're going to want to not have a deal that's too sweet for the UK. And that means that there's going to be some really very tough negotiations. And it isn't like the UK is moving into this negotiation with no cards in its hand, because it can really do whatever it wants, and the range of possible policies that could be implemented in order to bolster its negotiating position is I think unlimited. And that then leaves the EU in a difficult position, because And this is something that was largely predictable, because you cannot simply ask people to take fiscal tightening year after year after year with no prospect of it ending and no prospect of economic recovery. So we've already seen the UK leave, and then the big question is how much of it now is the rest of the Eurozone willing to take when you have an example of a country that has had the gumption to vote with its principles. So the big question now, and it is because we've had such volatility everywhere, it's, I think, very important to highlight those markets that finished on their lows today, because both Spain and Italy finished right on their lows. They were both down over 12% in here today. Now, that is almost double on the downside what the DAX fell. So, and it isn't that the DAX wasn't down more earlier on, but it rallied well off its lows. But both Spain and Italy finished on their lows. So then you don't have to look very far to identify where do people see the risk. It's in Spain and Italy, and particularly Italy, because they have to push through this recapitalization of the banking sector. And and the Italian public are not particularly friendly to that eventuality, regardless of the fact that it amounts to something in the region of 1-2% of GDP. So we're not talking about massive amounts of money. But of course, Italy is an enormously indebted country. And of course, and it's something I remember hearing in my childhood, it's that when you owe somebody £10, it is your problem. When you owe them £1 million, it's their problem. And for Italy, it is everybody's problem, because they're all holding Italian debt. And Italian debt right now is trading in negative territory out to maturities of almost 3 years. And the yield on the 10-year, it jumped quite a bit today. But it jumped by 15 basis points, and on a bond that yields 1.5%, that's more than a 10% move on the day. So we can see that there was definitely some buying of Italian bonds and at the peak of the day. But then there is the potential that that spreads are going to widen out, that Italy is not going to continue to enjoy the support of investors, while it may certainly enjoy the support of the ECB, because the ECB simply cannot afford for a Eurozone country to leave. Now, then here are another consideration. There are two possible outcomes to this result. One is that you have an additional set of referendums, potentially in France or the Netherlands, or in Italy, and one or other of those decides to leave, and that creates an existential crisis for the Eurozone. And that would be potentially much larger than the crisis that is currently underway. So that's certainly one potential outcome. The other potential outcome is that it drives it. The current situation acts as a catalyst for additional cohesion within the Eurozone, and that countries that do not want to be part of a united Europe or a federal Europe leave, and those that that want to stay, and hopefully those that have a shared border, decide that they do want to be part of a federal Europe. But of course, the more democratic way would be to offer individual countries the chance to vote on that potential outcome. But of course, the problem is that there's practically no country would vote for it. So when we talk about additional cohesion within the Eurozone, then that isn't going to work unless it is accompanied by the incredibly tight fiscal rules that have been imposed on heavily indebted countries being relaxed. So you need to see some form of fiscal forgiveness, at least allow countries to try and spend their way into growth. Because without it, the rest of populations that are increasingly evident in a whole host of countries are going to are unlikely to be satisfied with anything other than that kind of outcome. And when you look at who is likely to benefit from this, then Russia really comes out on top. The market today was really very inert, and considering just how much volatility we have had, then that is particularly noteworthy. And then we consider that it is certainly in Germany's interests to continue to have the Eurozone, because they get to have their trading partners trade in their own currency. It keeps the value of that currency artificially depressed, which gives their export sector a massive competitive advantage. So then are very much in favor of that. And the Eastern European bloc has got to be worried now, because a breakup of the Eurozone, a breakup of the EU, would raise the possibility that they're going to experience an additional threat from Russia. So Russia's got to be rubbing its hands together here and thinking that this really is the best possible scenario, that a vocal opponent of any kind of détente between the EU and Russia has now left. It could potentially mean that that Germany, rather than looking westward for further integration and for its greatest allies, will begin to pivot to the east. And again, that would also be in Russia's interests, because Russia supplies Germany with the vast majority of its natural gas. And since Germany has closed all of its nuclear plants and is increasingly looking at both solar and wind to make up its electricity, they're going to need a lot more gas to make up for the shortfall that they're going to have, and to ensure that they have base load. Those, of course, are geopolitical considerations that are likely to have an influence on markets over the medium to long term. And by that, I think we're talking somewhere in the region of between 3 and 10 years. When we look at where the potential is right now, then obviously the UK has got an awful lot of work to do, and they need a weaker currency. And the market has certainly obliged by giving them a weaker currency, and the Bank of England is unlikely to want to have any kind of real big bounce in the pound, but by the same token, they probably don't want it falling by 12 cents a day either. So we can anticipate that the pound is likely to remain weak for the foreseeable future, and that represents a massive competitive advantage for the UK economy. So then the terms of trade with the Eurozone are certainly one consideration, but it's an awfully big world out there, and the UK is notable for having some of the most internationally oriented companies, not just in Europe but in the world. The ability of the corporate sector to thrive in this environment, I think, is there's a compelling argument for that. When we start to look around, then just strip out all of the other considerations and simply look at the price action, then we are presented with more or less consistent downtrends in the majority of Europe. And the FTSE 100 has been perhaps the most resilient of all the major indices, in that it has been largely range-bound for the last 16 years and is still, despite the big pullbacks that we've had, it's still trading relatively close to the upper side of that range. When we look at the Euro stocks, then the Euro stocks has really made very heavy weather of it, from the rally up from the 2012 low, and is now pulling back, and it's down 13% so far this year, and that's a 15% in euro terms, a 13% in US dollar terms. So there is a lot of work that it has to do, and that is indicative of the problems that really do stand out within the Eurozone. But when we look at Wall Street then, and go back and look at that list of indices and currencies that finished on their lows for the day, then Wall Street stands out. Every one of the major indices finished on the low of the day. The Dow Jones was down 3.39%. The Nasdaq was down over 4%. The Russell was down. So then what the big risk is, and I think that the repercussions of what's happening within the Eurozone, they will have unsettled a lot of people. A lot of people had stops triggered in here today. There was some evidence of bargain hunters coming in today, but where is the new big money going to come from? And this will have shaken a lot of people out of their complacency. And when you've had a range that's going on for a long time and you're at the upper side of that range, then a clear downward dynamic would confirm resistance once more at the upper side of that range. That's exactly what we've seen this week. And so the potential for a retest of the lower side of the range becomes an increasingly likely scenario. So the S&P 500 was down 76 points today and closing at 2037. And that is exactly the region of the 200-day moving average. So it needs to bounce, and it needs to bounce emphatically on Monday if the potential for an additional pullback is going to be negated. And then when we start to think about where it is that we are, that valuations are not cheap, and they're obviously more attractive today than they were yesterday, considering how much prices have pulled back. Corporate profits are no longer rising, and the market has been going sideways, at least Wall Street has been going sideways for the last while. Well, then this has been a lengthy consolidation following a very impressive breakout. It's a first step above the base, and then we could see additional pullbacks. And the real risk, I suppose, get back to my point, is that because of the role of high-frequency trading, automated trading systems, or quantitative systems, then there is the potential that we get a flash crash, very similar to what we saw last August. Now, last August, it was due to the gumming up or the failure of BNY Mellon's ETF pricing model, and that infected just about all the other ETFs. And because passive investing and ETFs are the predominant way that most investors now access the market, they can have a profound effect on anything that happens. So if in the event that we do get another one of those ETF pricing models failing, then there is the potential that we get a short, sharp pullback. But that could be a very deep pullback. So, and the lesson that we learned, not just from the one last August, but in previous flash crashes is that it really does pay to have bids way under the market. And in the order of 20 to 30%, because if a market pulls back, it might only be down there for seconds or even just minutes before it bounces. But the potential for a flash crash after an event like we've had today, or for a fund or a hedge fund or a pension that has been caught wrong-footed and been either long and wrong or short and wrong, and now to be experiencing margin calls they can't cover, and a big fund blow-up is not at all unlikely in here. In fact, it's practically inevitable. So there is a real potential that we get a flash crash. That is perhaps the most immediate risk. And then, of course, the other way of playing it is to be short the market. So having been down between 3 and 4% this today, and the majority of indices in Europe being down in excess of 6%, then there is potential that we do get a little bit of steadying next week. But then will that just be an opportunity for people to let some of their inventory out? Because what we would need to see in order for markets to break up and up out of this lengthy range, for Europe to break that what is now a more than year-long progression of lower rally highs, would be massive central bank intervention. Now, there's very little prospect of the Fed raising rates anytime soon. I think it's something like a 17% chance for September, but it might not be at all this year, considering the risks that are outstanding in the Eurozone, particularly. So the ECB is going to be making liquidity available to anyone who wants it. They're not going to let any more banks go bust, but the Eurozone banking sector is in real trouble. And part of the reason that they're in trouble is because they didn't write off any of the bad debts that resulted from the sovereign debt crisis. Now, the USA went through a binge of foreclosures, but they did clean up their balance sheets, and that just has not happened in the Eurozone. And the reason it didn't happen is because of that cross-ownership. That's a significant problem, and it's not something that's going to get fixed in the short term. So then what is the ECB going to do? They're going to be printing like there's no tomorrow. And Japan, having seen the yen strengthen to almost exactly 99 this morning, the yen is at 102 right now, and that's still stronger by nearly 4 full yen from yesterday's close. Now, the Japanese don't want to have a strong currency. They've been willing to tolerate it because they're experimenting with negative interest rates. The Eurozone has been willing to tolerate the strength of the euro. The euro is currently around 111, and it was down almost 3 full cents in here today. But they've been willing to tolerate it because they're experimenting with negative rates. But negative rates are inherently deflationary, and the last thing either one of those central banks needs is deflation. So the big question is, when are they going to realize that? When are they going to admit that the experiment with negative interest rates has not worked, that they need to change tack, and that they need to re-engage with massive monetary accommodation? And in the event that that happens, then we could move into a more bullish environment overall. But the problem is that there is no evidence of it just yet, and that the short-term bias remains on the downside. Now, when we start looking further afield, I think it is notable that the Chinese renminbi moved to a new low in here today. And whatever about politicians talking about the USA's trade deficit with China, China, in fact, does way more business with Europe than it does with the USA. And then a continued are an even more deflationary environment in Europe is really bad news for China. And China is engaged in massive fiscal spending, and it's engaged in monetary accommodation, and it is supporting the market. And when I recorded the audio last night, the CSI 300 future was trading below 3,000, and yet it closed above 3,000 again. It was only down 1.29%. So it's looking increasingly likely that China is defending that 3,000 level. And if that is a backstop on the market, well then, isn't there the prospect that more people will eventually realize that if the index is not going to fall, then the penalty for having long positions is relatively small. So you're probably better off being long than short. And then you start getting the market recovering. Obviously, the Chinese don't want a bubble on their hands. They don't want the kind of volatility that they were subject to last year. But by the same token, they don't want the market falling below that 3,000, considering how many times it has bounced from it now. And in the face of what are ostensibly, you know, really quite negative news items, the market keeps bouncing. So that's certainly something to keep an eye on. And of course, gold prices today really rallied impressively, and closing out the day up about $59, around 1,315, and that's a new recovery high. Now, it's well off the high of the day. The high of the day was much closer to 1,360, and it's a pretty similar story for silver. It was above $18 briefly today, and is closing out the day up 42, and pretty close to that $18 level. And platinum was up $21. So when we know that central banks, you know, really have a predictable set of policies that they're going to impose, then doesn't it make sense to own something that cannot simply be printed into existence? So, and not least because gold is one of those assets that is not close to its all-time high. When you look at stocks, perhaps the most attractive characteristic that many shares have is their yields, which in a negative interest rate environment are highly attractive. And the FTSE 100, despite everything that has happened, still yields over 4%. And that's a substantial yield on an index when bonds yield nothing at all, and many of them. And it is in the order of 50% of all sovereign bonds yield less than zero. And when you consider that the USA is still in positive territory, it means that just about almost all other sovereign bonds are trading in negative yields. Now, perhaps the challenge for emerging markets isn't so much that they have a great deal of trade with the UK, but rather that the rally that we've had in the dollar represents a challenge, because the weakness of commodity and emerging market currencies acted as a significant headwind last year, and now we're getting safe haven buying of the dollar. So that has the potential to represent a headwind again for emerging markets. But I think there is the world of difference between thinking about dollar strength and emerging market currency weakness. It isn't the emerging markets that are weak right now, but rather that the dollar is strong for an esoteric reason. And those currencies have already bounced fairly substantially, and they are in a much better position. And this is really quite similar to the fallout after the credit crisis, that everything pulled back, but that it was a number of those emerging markets bounced early, bounced most, and I suppose bounced first. And then the potential for that to happen again, I think, is probably more likely than not. And, of course, the bond markets were very firm in here today. I think at one point the long bond in the US was stronger by 6 full points, and it's closing out the day stronger by about 4.5. So that's significant. That's a significant rally, and a further compression of yields. And the UK gilt was stronger by nearly 3 points. But I would be rather cautious about buying bunds, for the simple reason that the German government has got so much exposure to the rest of the Eurozone. And in the event that that another country leaves the EU, well, then Germany's the country that's going to be on the hook. And yes, of course, it's AAA rated, but at the same time, does one really need to be getting nothing at all in terms of the yield, or even indeed paying a yield to buy those bonds, when there are more attractive opportunities out there? In fact, I think that that bunds are probably one of the more risky credits out there at present. And the other interesting market here was oil. Oil prices were down about $2.50, and we've been talking since early January that reactions in the order of $5 to $6 represent inverted commas normal reaction in the course of this rebound, which has seen prices almost double. But that's a fairly substantial pullback, and it really does need to hold last week's low, because last week's low was almost exactly $6, another normal sized reaction, and then you get this impressive bounce. Well, that low was taken out, then you will have a lower high, you'll have a lower low, you'll have a larger reaction, and the market will be trading below the region of the 200-day moving average. And then you've got pretty good evidence that the rebound is over, and that the prices could, well, go right back down and test the low. And of course, that would be also a deflationary signal. It may also, of course, be that some of the supply that's been taken offline comes back online. So I think oil prices are very worthwhile watching, particularly because they're a large cap sector, which has been among the very best performers so far this year. And if oil prices begin to roll over again, then that's going to weigh on the energy sector, which will then have a knock-on effect for the wider market. The VIX index closed way off its low in here today. It gapped up this morning, and when it closed out the day, it was only down very marginally on the day off the open, but way above where it closed yesterday. And that's an indication that, and you know, we have to just consider, if you had to go out and create your own automated trading system, then the only way that you could really tell it how to size the positions is in terms of the individual volatility of the instruments. If volatility is rising, then the size of those positions has to be smaller, and therefore, what we've seen is that as volatility rose, the stock market began selling off, because those automated trading systems have to sell when volatility goes up. And that's going to continue as long as volatility is rising. So we are still at risk here that the market could pull back further, and before the full effects of what central banks have in store, because central banks have so far been reasonably quiet, and certainly they've been buying bonds, but nobody needs any encouragement to buy bonds at the present time, and they've been making money available to the banking sector, and yet the banks are among the weakest sectors right now. So this continues to remain a very difficult environment. I personally don't think that the rather hysterical commentary about how bad this is for the UK is particularly relevant, but nonetheless, that is what is really attaching itself to people and what sentiment is likely to be. I think it's very important to remember too that technological innovation isn't going to be affected by this at all. And particularly the technology in the energy sector is not going to be affected by this at all. That next year, all those 20-something-year-olds and teenagers in large population emerging markets will be 1 year older. And anything that's happening today will not change that fact. So this is a difficult environment. This is something that is a situation that has been imposed on the market rather than anyone going out and seeking it. It is not going to last forever. It's going to create buying opportunities for sure. And we saw plenty of evidence in here today that it was big global companies with records of paying out attractive dividends that bounced most in the UK. That there was a lot of people were looking at them and thinking that if they could get a bargain in companies like Shell or a Reckitt-Benckiser or Unilever, then that they would pick them up. And they stayed down for a very short period of time before rallying all the way back up. And of course, the reason for that is because they have large global businesses where they don't rely on the pound or the UK for the vast majority of their business. And therefore, they're going to be getting windfall profits by redenominating their profits into pounds. So, and that remains they remain the clear winners from this kind of scenario. And the FTSE 100 is loaded with them. So that's one of the reasons that it's going to exhibit relative strength, at least on a nominal basis. And I think the most important thing to bear in mind is that we are at the upper side of a lengthy range on Wall Street. And there is the potential that if we don't get a bounce early next week, that the market pulls back further. And that would allow valuations to improve, and that would represent an attractive entry opportunity. So then it's probably not quite a time to be buying just yet, but depending on how things develop next week, it might be a time to be starting to think about a cost averaging type of buying strategy, because we're going to remain really quite volatile. And but that is only until central banks announce whatever it is that they're going to do to support the market. And I'm not for 1 minute saying that that's what they need to do, but rather that that is more the most likely thing that they're going to do. Our opinions don't matter at all, but rather we only can react to the reality provided by the market. And it has certainly been a very exciting 2 days. And my voice is beginning to give out. So I'm going to leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.